I'd like to apologize for my absence last week.
I know it was the last minute, but as some of you already know that I've been walking around for 3 weeks with what they call a slip disc, and it put me out of action. I did not go to shul for 2 Shabbatot in a row. It was the first time since I was 3 years old. So, now forget about walking tall in the Chama from my house. I mean, I have Nyanam across the street from my house. I couldn't walk. And I spoke the past Shabbat, Baruch Hashem, I made it to shul, and I spoke about, among other things, that we say the brachot in the morning, Birkot HaShachar. So, you know, you can very generalize and thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for waking up in the morning, which obviously is no small matter. But what we do is, remember when you fill out tax forms, you can have the short form and you can have the long form. The long form is called itemizing. Right? So you itemize everything. And remember, the Rav Zecharia Livracha taught us that when it comes to Shira, thanking, praising God and so on, we ought to itemize. And not just in one swipe say, "Oh, okay, thanks for everything." Really get down to details. So the Rambam tells us, based on the Gemara, the end of Masechet Brachot, that when you get up in the morning, there are all kinds of stages of getting up in the morning. And each stage brings out another bracha at the moment that you perform that stage. Whether it's opening your eyes, getting dressed, and putting your foot on the ground, putting your shoes on, taking your first step. So Ashkenazim don't do this like the Rambam. Ashkenazim have it all wrapped up in the Siddur under the title Birkot HaShachar, where some people say it in shul, more often it's said running to shul, and sometimes people garble it up at home because they want a little coffee and make sure they put in a good word to Rabbi Shalom before they drank the coffee in the morning. So those are the Birkot HaShachar, and we know that Baruch Hashem, when everything is okay, then we don't even think about these brachot. We're on automatic pilot, and we're just zapping through the Birkot HaShachar. All you have to do is slip once and realize that any of those stages, human beings are vulnerable, and when you get it back, you start recognizing the importance of each individual bracha. Amechin mitzadei gaver, that you can take a step. And taking a step is not a small matter. As we all know, and some people need assistance, some people need a cane, some people need walkers, halichon, some people need wheelchairs. But just to take that step. So I went back into, I have some pictures that my kids sent from the grandchildren. I'm sure all of you remember the first step that a child took, the first step that a grandchild took. The kid plops down right away anyway. But what's the difference? It's that first step. Of course, I have from my son in Florida, so he had his son go on the bike for the first time. So I said, "How did it end?" He says, "Crash landing." It was a great ride. It was all the way down the block, but the camera didn't focus what happened at the end. Yeah, he fell, that's all. But that's how you learn to ride a bike. Right? If a mother's going to say, "Oh, yo, he's going to get hurt," then he's never going to ride a bike. You have to fall. And the baby who starts walking at a year, year and a half, whatever, has to fall. That's all. You have to plop and fall, get up again, and that's part of the learning process. And for adults, if strikes you down for a few weeks, you get up again and you realize, Hamechim mitzadei gaver, you took a step, it's no small matter. And the Rav said it in the context, and it's perfect for a rainy day. Thank God it's not a drought year. I mean, drought in halacha comes in 2 packages. One is not enough rain. In this country, we're just a bunch of complainers, so it is never enough rain, right? I never heard that there was enough rain. Any winter, never enough rain. But Baruch Hashem, there's rain. And there's snow, which means it's going to melt, it'll fill up the Kinneret a little bit. But drought, what the Torah talks about, Ve'atzarat Hashamayim V'lo Yeh Matar, that means not a drop of rain from Sukkos. Not a drop of rain, total drought. And the Daven and the fast days, the whole Masechet Tanit is built on this. And then all of a sudden it starts raining. So there's a chovat hodaya. You have to thank Kadosh Baruch Hu. So what's the bracha? Al kol tipa v'tipa. On every drop. On every drop. You might say, well, is it a few drops fell? No. A lot of rain fell. But you thank Kadosh Baruch Hu for every drop. And the Rav said, this is a fundamental idea. and saying Shira Takadosh Baruch Hu. Don't forget about every drop. Every single drop is important. And that I thank Akadosh Baruch Hu. And because you know we're all so close, I can share with you that I had a very important follow-up meeting yesterday with an orthopedic surgeon, and the word surgery was not used. It was used the week before, but it was not used. I have to walk a lot, and I like to walk anyway, so I'll get out of this, and it's fine. Just they made me into a narcotic 2 weeks ago, but that's behind me. The best thing was steroids. Wow, what a wonder drug. What a wonder drug. Mamash, 1 week of steroids. But the problem is, I'm off steroids, and now I'm back to, you know, pain management. But all right, it'll be fine. I decided to talk today about Isha Haruya Lehorot, a woman who's fitting to render a halachic decision because of a public controversy that's going on right now, predominantly in the States. Here, we are light years ahead, literally light years ahead, in terms of the progress of women in the world of Torah study, in the world of Torah leadership, in the world of Torah application to reality, psak halacha. It's true, not every rov in town in Yerushalayim or throughout Eretz Yisrael may be happy with this development. But the fact is, it is it's here and it's here to stay. It's not a fleeting thought or a passing phenomenon. We know that it's coming from a good place. When we talk about various sectarian movements, the days of Chazal, the Tzedokim, the Sadducean sect, or in the days of the Rambam, the Karaites, the Karaim, and in the days of Shamshon al-Falhir, the Reform, so they weren't coming from a good place in the sense that these were serious digressions from the tradition, and they were deliberately out to somehow pull apart those fundamental ideas of tradition, which brought about these sectarian groups, and they were out of the fold of mainstream Judaism to a large degree. What's happening now is not so. Unfortunately, there are some Rabbanim, predominantly in America, who are trying to mold this whole issue as being out of the fold. I will make reference to an article that my brother sent to me just last night, authored by 5 rabbis. One is Natty Helfgott, I don't know if you know him. He's and a few other Rabbanim, some are from Atlanta. My brother's one of the co-signers of this article. And he writes that this very, very point, that we think about, where all this is coming from. This is from genuine Avodat Hashem, genuine upgraded Torah study, and the realization that women do have the capability. So, indeed, we have traditions from our Rebbe the Rav, and we have halachot, we have all this. Things can be, no doubt, things can be structured in a way that modern Orthodoxy can encompass all of this. But there was already a reaction. We put something on the web, so everything, there's a blog. So to call my brother a neoconservative, my brother's not a neoconservative. My brother's a frumayid. He's an Orthodox rabbi in every sense of the word. No neoconservative there at all. We're getting to it. We're getting to it. Hang in there. So the big issue was that Rabbi Avi Weiss from Riverdale set up a yeshiva, and a yeshiva basically to train women to receive smicha. There were all kinds of cosmetic issues. What are you going to call a rabbi, a woman who achieves the level of smicha? Maharat, Rabban, Rabbanit. See, Rabbanit doesn't work because a wife of a Rav is a Rabbanit. In Yiddish, a Rebbetzin, whether you like it or not. So, a woman could be literally an ignoramus. Perhaps she knows how to make a good kugel, but she's a Rabbanit because her husband happens to be the Rav. Now, that's not a simple matter because the Gemara says, Eshet Chaver Ki Chaver. The Chaver in the days of Chazal meant a big Talmud Chacham. And so it's a notch under Rav, but it's still a big Talmud Chacham. And the wife is afforded the same kavod that the Chaver himself. Because that's part of the kavod that you give the chaver, you give it to the wife too. Eshet chaver ke chaver. So that's why we refer to the wife of a rov as a rabbanit or a rebbetzin, whether she knows anything or not. She may not be capable to render halakhic decisions at all, but that's the kavod that's afforded. I know that in Germany, so after Hirsch, after Sham Shafal Hirsch, so it became very important that a community rabbi was also academically trained. I mean, this is part of the Hirsch, you know, philosophy of Torah and Derech Eretz. So in America, we've heard of rabbi doctor, but there, somehow or another, they did it the other way around. It was like, they used to call him Herr Doktor Rabbina. H-E-R-R means sir, like Adoni. Herr Doktor Rabbina. And the wife, she could have been an ignoramus too, Frau Doktor Rabbina. So she got the same title, Frau Doktor Rabbina. And that's the way it was. Eshet chaver ke chaver. But that's not what we're talking about now. So when my daughter, Hannah, who's a physician, and she's an MD working, and Ms. Sherman, next month she will be out of a residency and be a mumchit, even though she told me she was a mumchit already for the last 25 years. But it's a whole process that she didn't even initiate, but it just snowballed into something that at the yeshiva in Otniel, very fine yeshiva, and a very fine Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Reima Cohen, who's a Talmud, one of the Talmidim Muvhakim of Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein in the Gush, and a very important Rav of Kfar Etzion, Rav Knoll, who also has expertise in areas of Dinei Nashim, Dinei Nida, which my wife, my daughter is a gynecologist, so she's specifically in this area, and she studied with Rav Benny Lau at Beit Marasha, Shulchan Aruch Evin Ezer, with all the poiskim, and did a b'china bal peh with three different independent rabbanim. So this is what's going on today, and this didn't come from me, believe me, this is her initiative and so on. So after all this said and done, so I said, so what are we going to call your husband, my son-in-law? So she said, a rabbit. He's the rabbits, right? You got to call him something, right? He's just a doctor, so now he's the rabbits doctor. Dr. Rabbits, right. But, you know, and my daughter's not interested in communal leadership positions. She's not running to be an assistant rabbi anywhere. She's a physician at Soroka and Beersheba. But people ask her questions, I mean shyless, in the area. And, you know, there's a strong, besides the Bedouin community down there, there's a lot of Haredi community down there, in Tifrach, and Ofakim, and Netivot, and the women are comfortable asking her Shelot. They're comfortable. And that is a tremendous accomplishment. Tremendous accomplishment. Because in yesteryear, you know, women didn't know how to turn to, and not every woman is interested in turning to a Rav. Of course, I give a lot of credit to Hannah Henkin in Nishmat for organizing the Yoetzet Halacha program. And the Yoetzet Halacha program basically trains women to deal with these very sophisticated and highly sensitive halachic issues. And in order to get around the politics, they called it Yoetzet. Yoetzet means an advisor. An advisor means, you know, you're kfufa, you're under somebody's, you know, really on top, the final say. But the bottom line is, you're really rendering the psak, but they don't want to call it a psak. My brother has in Tinek a full-time Yoetzet on staff. And last year he told me she received 1,200 shaylos. And many, that's a lot of shaylos for a woman. And my brother said, many of these women would not have asked him the shayla. These are very, very sensitive shaylos. And they feel, you know, competent that they can go to a yoetzet and so on. So there's now a backlash in the modern Orthodox world. You have to realize that Yeshiva University has moved somewhat to the right. There's a little, I'm being kind, somewhat to the right. And I will say with the greatest reverence to the Rosh Yeshiva there, and some of them were my own, Rav Hersh Shechter, I love him dearly, and he was my Rebbe, and others, they are sincerely, you know, great Talmidei Chachamim, without any doubt. There is an issue about Roshei Yeshiva getting involved on the communal level when it comes to Psak. The one who wrote about this extensively was the Rav Son, Chaim Soloveitchik, in 1992, Rupture and Reconstruction, a very brilliant article demonstrating that in Ashkenazi, in Sephardi Jewry for the last 1,000 years, What was important to a Pesach was, how do I understand the sources? I open up a Rambam, I break my head, I figure it out, that's the halacha. You're doing it the other way? Guys, you're wrong, let's change. That was the Sephardi approach. You have to do it the way the sources indicate. It's true, you can have different opinions of what the sources are saying, but the sources are really the mainstay of the authority. In Ashkenazi Jewry, the sources were also important, but they were not exclusive. What was equally as important is what the community was doing. And that's called Takanat Kahal. What the community was doing was no less important, sometimes more important, than the way you understood the sources. To the extent that Rabbeinu Tam, Rashi's grandson, in the Tosfot, will bend backwards to try to justify a source because the people are doing it differently than what appears to be the source is saying. And Chaim Soloveitchik did this with two specific areas. One was Yayin Nesach, because the wine Jews in the Middle Ages were limited because of the church and different professions, but wine production, they were in that business, and money lending, ribit. And these specific two areas, you know, he did a lot of work. But he points out that up until the end of the 19th century, or basically World War I, this is the way Ashkenazi Jewry functions. So the last luminary of this style of Psak Halacha in the 19th century is the Oruch HaShulchan, not to be confused with the Shulchan Oruch. Oruch HaShulchan is Rabbi Chil Mechel Halevi Epstein, and it's an encyclopedic halachic work. He's a notorious makel, lenient, where I can tell you that some people in New York, when they're involved in making a shidduch, so, they're a makel. You know, if you're a makel, that means it's 2 points against you. You know, even though the Gemara says kochad de hetera adif, the power of the lenient opinion is a stronger opinion, because the lenient opinion has to justify. The stronger opinion can say, I don't know. So, you know, lieta bitachon. I'll just not do it. You don't have to justify it. So the Oruch HaShulchan is the last one who's looking at the community minhag and justifying, even with the word limud zchut, the limud zchut. If this is Am Yisrael's doing it this way, that's okay. For example, chodosh, you know, you're not allowed to eat the new grains before the offering of the Omer. Well, there's no Omer today, there's no Beit HaMikdash. So according to Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, it's the 17th of Nisan. So when I grew up in Washington Heights and then in Borough Park, I never heard of being careful about Yoshan and Chodosh. Never heard of it. It wasn't in the lexicon. It wasn't the cards. Today, you know, touchdown in Queens, Brooklyn, whatever. It's all over the signs, right? Yoshan, Chodosh, Noki, Mikshash Chodosh, and so on. First time I ever saw it in my life was in a visit in 1980 to Chicago, Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik's Chol Rachu was Makbid. It was in a pizza shop, and it was part of the Tudat Hechsher. The first time I ever saw it. Now, you know, it's common practice. So what happened? Everybody knew the Rambam. Everybody knew the Shulchan Aruch. But in Ashkenaz, it was limited to an Eretz Yisrael concern, not a Chutz La'aretz concern. The Rambam has it, even a Chutz La'aretz. So the question is, why did it catch on? And you see the Oruch HaShulchan, just limud zchut. This is the way we do it, you know, it's okay. And if this is the way we do it, it's okay. But what happened was World War I caused the upheaval of Jewish communities in Europe, and after the destruction of it was the Shoah, which meant that kind of rabbinic communal leadership practically ceased to exist on European soil. So how did Torah survive? Torah survives in cocoons, spiritual cocoons called yeshivas. That's how it survives. So the champion of Torah after the Shoah becomes the Rosh Yeshiva and not the Rav in town. And that's why the big sefer that makes it after the Shoah is the Mishnah Berurah. Chavetz Chaim was not the Rav of Radin. He was Rosh Yeshiva in Radin. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein was the Rosh Yeshiva. Rabbi Aaron Kotler was the Rosh Yeshiva. Now to say to the credit of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein as a Rosh Yeshiva of Tiferet Yerushalayim, he had his eyes wide open in terms of what's happening in the community. So he was unusual. So he was able to deal with the realities because he had people around him, like his He had a son-in-law of Tendla, who really, you know, opened his eyes as what really is happening. But fundamentally, he was Rosh Yeshiva. And Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach here in Eretz Yisrael, Rosh Shlomo was Rosh Yeshiva. So it was the Rosh Yeshiva who became the great, great poskim of the last two, three generations. And that's how Torah survives. Now, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik points out that in the spiritual cocoon, you know, it's like a Tevat Noach with opaque windows. You couldn't care less what the community out there is doing. You're just going back to the sources. And when you're living in this type of hibernation, you can be machmir as much as you want. You can be the strictest opinion. And that's why there's a move to the right in terms of the strict opinions in halacha. The OU, and we're sitting right here in the OU of Yerushalayim, the OU, Orthodox Union of... It used to be called Union of Orthodox Jewish Congregations of America, Council. So the OU used to be, do you remember the first Heksha in OU? Heinz Beans. Remember? Now you got the OU on everything. Said, Baruch Hashem. I mean, in terms of kashrus, you can't beat them. Talmud Chover, what's his name? Menachem Genak, Talmud Chovev of the Rav, you know, heads the whole thing. I mean, he's just terrific. The integrity and the professionalism, and I don't have to sing the praises of the OU. I can't stand it when people tell me, "Hey, it's only OU." You know, that's zilzel. It's mamash zilzel. It's just. But anyway, the OU is a shul organization. Now, it's not Lashon Hara or Moitzi Shemra to point out that there are many OU shuls throughout the United States that had halachically compromising mechitzas, problematic issues in the shul. But the policy was, the OU as a lay organization did not paskin shaylos. It has a rabbinic arm. It's called the Rabbinical Council of America, the RCA, Statut HaRabbanim. And the OU is there to, you know, facilitate the community facet of binding these shuls together into one cohesive organization. The feeling also was that every Rav in his town has the authority to deal with the halachic issues on the local level. Now, that is a correct halacha, by the way, what I just said. That is a correct halacha. That a mara da'atra, the person who is the rav of the place, is the authority for that particular locale. I found this out, maybe I knew it theoretically, but you know, in America there's a thing called installation of rabbis. My wife said, you install air conditioners, you install the refrigerator, the washing machine, and the rabbi. Right? So we had an installation in Astoria, Queens. And remember Rabbi Zvulun Chalap came on behalf of the yeshiva. It was very nice, Rabbi Chubad. And something came up after the dinner with Meir, moving the machitz or whatever. And I looked to Rabbi Chalap. I was a whole 24 years old at the time. And I looked to Rabbi Chalap, a senior rabbi for many years. Rav Chalap looked at me and he said, Aaron, you're the Mara D'Asra. Whatever you say, that's what we're going to do. And right then and there, I felt it on the shoulders. I mamish felt the achrayut on the shoulders. And I was scared. It wasn't so simple, you know. And I had this once with a wedding right here in the Great Synagogue. We have wonderful people from Ramot who was getting married, and they asked me to be beside Kiddush in the Chosin. Boy learned in Gush. I said, ask the Rosh Hashiva. She said, yeah. He sat down with Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Mital. And he says, I don't know who to choose, so whoever can make it. So Rav Mital said, where do you daven? He said, in Ramot. So Rav Mital said, okay, fine. So ask Rav Adler to be Mitzvah Kedushin, and we'll come. We'll come. Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Mital are sitting there, and I'm Mitzvah Kedushin. So, of course, there's always an issue with the ketubah, whatever. I looked at Rav Mital. He looks at me, and he says, you're the Mitzvah Kedushin. Whatever you do, I back you. I mean, that is... You're not going to see this by a lot of Rabbanim today, or Rosh Hashiva. You're not going to see this at all. Everybody's like, you know, they want to be the first one to introduce the Nuchumra and so on. But that's the halacha. That's called Mara D'Atra. Very, very, very important. So that's what the OU was traditionally. The problem is that the institution of Rabbi Avi Weiss now, with the Marat program, and things that are coming out of, from what they're hearing of things coming out of Israel, from the Midrashat Lindenbaum, and others who are involved in smicha granting for women, and then having assistant rabbis of women being engaged in their professional services. So the OU decided they're going to set up a rabbinic panel of very respectable people, believe me, and they're going to deal with the issue. And there was a report that came out just a few days ago. It was publicized and it's available on the web. The problem is that it took a very, very hard line on the core issue. While I would say that there was progress, and any degree of progress important, there was an acknowledgement that, you know, women have come a long way in Torah study and in Torah teaching. There was an allowance. They said, yes, no, you shuls, a woman can give a shiur. Not from the pulpit during davening before Musaf. Okay, I mean, you have to realize what's happening. They're also looking over the shoulder of the left, of the conservative, the reform. They're still holding that line. Where Rav Moshe Feinstein in 1950 was holding the line about the mechitza, so the mechitza is a mood issue. Nobody's talking mechitza anymore. You know, if either has a good mechitza or doesn't have mechitza, finished. But it's not an issue. It's not on the table anymore. So now these are the big issues on the table. You know, exactly what kind of bat mitzvah to do, where to do it. So they don't want that the woman should be involved in what they defined as a clergy position. Now that's ill-defined. What exactly is a clergy position? So, you know, a rabbi is a clergy, a sister rabbi is a clergy. You know, what about a gabbai? A gabbai is a clergy, yeah. What about the naming a baby at a brit? Is that a clergy? Because they use that also, is naming a baby at a brit. No, you can't have a... Why can't you have a woman named the baby at the brit? My Chanan, the doctor, rabbi, whoever. So I knew she was going to pull something off at the brit. And she called me up and invited me to say the brachot at the brit because the mechutin is going to be the sandak, which is perfectly okay with me. So I said, that's great. I get to hear the name 8 seconds before everybody else. She says, nope. I said, what do you mean, nope? There's a brach and you're going to say the brachot. So who's going to name? So my Chanan says, who do you think named the babies in Breshit? The mothers. One after the other. Who named the babies in Breshit? The mothers. No? So it says clearly. The mother gets up. That's not a clergy position. Not a clergy position. So this drew a lot of ripples and reactions and so on. And one of the reactions just came out yesterday in a New Jersey publication. My brother's one of the co-signers to it with four other rabbis. And really, they tackled... both the content and the procedure of the rabbis' panel of the RCA, of the OU, because they said it didn't reflect a cross-section. If you want to study the issue of the involvement of women in communal life, at least invite some of the women who are actively involved in it and hear them out. Talk to the rabbis of those shuls. Talk to the lay leadership of those shuls and see what they think about it. None of those shuls were brought into the picture for the discussion, which is very problematic because you want to, you know, focus and draw conclusions, but you've already biased yourself by not even exposing yourself to the good side, because there is a good side. Everybody knows there's a good side to it, and leaving that out was really a miscarriage of justice of sort in terms of the ultimate report. And otherwise, and beyond that, there were also issues that, on pure halachic grounds, this, you know, could be debated. My brother wrote that, indeed, the Rambam says, in the Hilchot Melachim, how does this all start? The Torah says, Som tasim alecha melech, appoint for you a king. Okay? So the Gemara says, Melech velo malka. Melech velo malka. Without going a moment forward, and if it's a malka, is she a king or not? Yes or no, halachically? The answer is yes. Did we have women who served as malachim? Absolutely, both in Bayit Rishon and Bayit Sheni. So Bayit Rishon, I'm not sure, right, with Altaliyah, I'm not sure she's the one I'm going to, but Shlom Tzion HaMalka, Heleni HaMalka, it's wonderful that we have streets named after them. Chazal lauded them. So the way the Rav understood the Hilchot Malachim is that there's what's called lichatchila. Lichatchila, it should be A, B, C, D. These are the prerequisites for the lichatchila. Like, for example, Shevet Yehuda. The Melech is supposed to come from Shevet Yehuda. Lo yosef Shevet Yehuda muchokek ben raglav. That doesn't stop the Rambam from legitimizing the Malchut Chashmonai, who are all Kohanim from Shevet Levi, in the Hanukkah episode, for 200 years. Which, okay, so it's not lechatchila. Is today's government lechatchila? No, that doesn't mean it doesn't have some element. And you should know, parenthetically, in 1969, when Levi Eshkol passed away suddenly, and the Labour Party suggested Golda Meir, so the Labour Party didn't have a problem, you know, suggesting a woman. The Aguda, they weren't part of the coalition anyway. It was only the Mizrahi that raised it as a halakhic issue. Can we join the government in terms of Som Tassim Alecha Melech, Melech Velo Malka? And the chief rabbis at the time, they said that the prime minister is not really a king, but he's like the chairman of the board of governors of the country. So she's Batul Bashishim, you know, she's just... I mean, Ben-Gurion had her already as... Golda was foreign minister already, so... Pesedda, so now she's prime minister, Pesedda. Okay, Pesedda, so they, you know... my wife has a cousin who said, if there's a will, there's a heter, you know, like a Pesedda. But at least it was a concern. Why was it a concern? Because we believe that there is some element of Malchut Yisrael in the government of Israel. That's why Falal Shalom, the first time he voted in 1996 here, came out of the booth and said, Shechiyanu. I said, what's Shechiyanu? He says, first time I fulfilled the mitzvah of Som Tassel Melech HaMelech. Made a Shechiyanu. This is kind of Zionist house I grew up on. It's indeed, Melech Velo Malka, says the Rambam, Melech Velo Malka. And then he says, the Rambam expands it. And I must tell you, most Rishonim don't buy into this, but the Rambam expands it. Not only Melech, but any public official. Any public official, Melech Velo Malka. Now once you say that, the Rav develops an idea called Srara. Srara is Srara with a sin. Sin, Resh, Resh, Hey. Srara means above, having authority over people. Melech Velo Malka. Now, if that's the case, then... you know, a woman can't be a dayan, a woman can't be a rov, a woman can't be this, can't be that, can't be that, can't be that. Fine. So, the article last night, they said if the OU is adopting this position, will the OU be prepared to come out and say that a ger cannot serve as a community rabbi? According to the Rambam, a ger can't be a dayan. So, a ger cannot be a convert, cannot be a dayan. So if a ger can't be a dayan, going to the Rambam, a ger can't be a community rabbi either. Is the OU prepared to make that statement? I mean, can you imagine what kind of backlash that would have? So they're inconsistent. You know, why, you know, pick, you know, for women, no. For gerim, yes. One second. You know, these are the same halachot. They're all coming from the same page of the Rambam. And we have to be careful about that. So my brother's point was, the whole, and it's an extensive treatment of this Rambam, and they dedicate 3.5 lines to it in the report. And the response to that was, this is not something to be studied in a yeshiva. This is for balabatim. It's a report, whatever. They wanted to make it user-friendly type of report. But that's not fair, because it's a complex issue. It's a very, very complex issue. And to make a case that it's prohibited for a woman to attain smicha. That's the shir right now. To show, and believe me, I'm not here... To remind some of my great Rabbeim of things that our own Rebbe, the Rav, said, and others you'll see on the page, that's not the case. The Rav was of the opinion that a woman can attain the level of smicha, and attain doesn't only mean theoretically studying the corpus of Shulchan Aruch, developing the experience, and being practical application, she's allowed to do it. She's allowed to do it al pi halakha. We have to distinguish between that and serving as a communal in a communal position. It's two different things. It's very much two different things. The rabbis panel did not want to make that distinction for fear that it's going to become blurred. And once a woman has smicha, why can't she already become an assistant rabbi? If an assistant rabbi, why not a rabbi? That's what they're worried about. What they call the haliga slippery slope. The holy slippery slope. Yeah, watch out.
Just in addition, Rabbi Weiss was forbidden to speak in a certain shul.
I know that. I heard about it. In Florida. I know. I know what happened. I know. It's very sad. It's very, very sad.
Who was it about?
Yeah, well, the rabbi, yeah, the one, Avi Weiss, it was, yeah, Bakshan.
Just a little perspective.
Yeah.
There was a time that I can recall, because I was involved with it a bit, that the OU position on women in lay leadership positions was also...
Correct. And the Rav also took a stand. I remember this back in the 70s, where the Rav said that a woman can serve on the board of the shul, but not be the president of the shul. because he felt the Rav used some criteria that if you have the unilateral right to sign checks and authorize monies, I mean, usually in a public institution you have to have a co-signature anyway, so it's not really unilateral, but the Rav said, I know what goes on. The other signer takes the checkbook and signs the whole checkbook, and then whoever is really giving out the money makes the second signature. So there is a certain amount of... I heard from my brother just recently that we were talking about a different issue. It's related, but with women and Simchat Torah. And we know what the Rav said in the 70s and the 60s. We know what he his opinion. And my brother said, you know, if the Rav would be around today, he might be singing a different tune. And that's interesting that my brother felt that, because that's the way we understood the Rav. He wasn't locked into, you know, something that was. He really did have his eyes open. And it did have he had this pulse. He felt the pulse of society. He very much did. He knew what was going on. And the Rav, more than anybody else, is responsible for the explosion of Torah study for women. I mean, that act of 1976, going to Stern College and throwing out the first ball at the Beis Medrash program, giving the shiur. It's filmed. It was a phenomenal demonstration. The Rav shied away from publicity, and he knew that Yeshiva University was going to go to town on this one. And they did, rightfully so. I spoke once in Migdal Oz, the women's division of Yeshivat Har Etzion, and I said, you all owe a debt of gratitude to the Rav, because if not for that, we wouldn't be here. There's not Nishmat, and not the Matan, and all, this is, it's in the Midrashah in Bar Ilan, and Drisha in America, and Stern College. It's unbelievable. And the Rav... I heard this from the Rav's daughter, Tara Tversky, who said that my father was the greatest feminist when it came to Talmud Torah. Because you know that in Maimonides, there was no separate education. It was co-ed from kindergarten to 12th grade till this very day. And all those who are saying that the Rav did it because it was financially difficult in 1937 to run two independent institutions, which it was difficult in 1937, let's not kid ourselves, the Rav had ample opportunity to make a mid-course correction when things got better in the United States, and did not. And the Rav's feeling was that if you have separate education, the women, the girls are going to get an inferior education. It's not going to be the same. And the only way the girls are going to get a superior Torah education is if they're going to learn it parallel with the boys. And what about the social issue of adolescence? My brother asked the Rav. The Rav said we have to be confident educators to deal with it. Look, my yeshiva Chashmonaim, it's a boys' yeshiva, but most of the guys in the yeshiva from 7th grade to 12th grade have, you know, some girls in their lives through Bnei Akiva. It's reality. And I recognize that. And instead of, you know, putting up all kinds of, you know, blocks, you know, walls and this and that, quite the contrary. I would try to encourage them, you know, to do things that would be acceptable halachically, teach them tzniut, teach them to hold the line. And I thought that was good chinuch. And it's okay, it's an approach. Not everybody's courageous enough to do this, but you have to do. You must do these things. Okay, so let's just see what happens here and where the point of departure is. The point of departure really is Parshat Shmini. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in a very rare move, speaks to Aharon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to Moshe all the time, right? V'adaber Hashem Moshe le'mor, v'adaber Hashem Moshe le'mor. And all of a sudden you get a pasuk, v'adaber Hashem el Aharon le'mor. So just as a Balkaire point, so we know this, we call it Yiddish, the trope, right? The musical cantillation, as it's called in English. Nobody knows what cantillation is. It's a trope. So, Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe Lemor is a Mercha Tipcha, Mercha Sof Pasuk. Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe Lemor. Right? Any variation of that. Vaydaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, Mercha Tipcha, Mercha Sof Pasuk. This Pasuk is Zakev Katan. Vaydaber Hashem Tipcha Sof Pasuk. El Aaron Lemor. What does that cause? It causes you to pause after the word Hashem. Because if you'd have the same trope, Vaydaber Hashem el Aharon Lemor, 99% of Balei Kriya would read it wrong because of habit. So the trope causes you to make a... Oh, 1 second. This is not Moshe. This is Aaron. Vaydaber Hashem el Aharon Lemor. Okay, Yayin v'shechar al tesht, atau v'necha itach, b'voachim alo amu'ed. You are forbidden to be intoxicated, not just wine, but any type of alcoholic beverage. Shechar, modern Hebrew, is beer. Any type of alcoholic beverage. You, your children, the Kohanim, b'voachim alo amu'ed, when you go into service in Beit HaMikdash. Which means there's an Issur Torah to serve in Beit HaMikdash intoxicated. Intoxicated doesn't mean Purim drunk. Intoxicated means a revi'it yayin. How much is a revi'it yayin? Well, depends who you ask. It's 86 milliliters is a revi'it yayin for arba kosot. Chazanish said 150 milliliters. But a cup of wine, and you're boxed out for today. And that halacha, by the way, applies to Birkat Kohanim today too. That's why in Simchas Torah, there's a lot of shuls, they don't go up for duchening for Musaf, because they probably had Kiddush already. And that's why we don't duchen for Mincha. That's why there's no duchening for Mincha, no Birkat Kohanim. Because in yesteryear, they didn't have Diet Coke. They used to drink wine for lunch. So if you can't ask around, did you drink wine? So, you know, so it's a one swipe. So there's no Birkat Kohanim because of this. But you figure in the morning, nobody had wine yet in the morning. So there's Birkat Kohanim. B'vo'achim alo amu'ed. V'lo tamutu. V'lo tamutu means, and if you do, it's capital punishment offense. Capital punishment offense for a Kohen to serve the Beit HaMikdash. Chukat olam l'dorotechem. This is a law. Ula havdil bein hakodesh uvein hachol, uvein hatameh uvein hatahor, ulehorot et bnei Yisrael et kol hachukim asher diber Hashem aleihem v'yad Moshe. The Torah says, by the way, not only are you not allowed to be intoxicated with wine or alcoholic beverages going into Beit HaMikdash and serving, but if you have to render a halachic decision of whether something is kosher or not kosher, tamei or tahor, you better be of a clear mind. Clear mind. So here, the poskim get into, is this also a capital punishment offense? Most probably not. There's a distinction between this and that. But the Torah forges together ula havdil, and to separate between the holy and the profane, the tahor, tameh, and the tahor, ula horot. What does the horot mean? It means the paskin ashayla. That's what it means in Yiddish, to render a halachic decision. Eid kol hachukim, asher diber Hashem aleihem, b'yad Moshe. You have to be clear, you know, tzalul, not under any alcoholic influence. Right. So the Rambam in source number 2 in Sefer Mitzvot says, HaMitzvah Ayin Gimel Hi, Shizhiranu Mehachnes LeMikdash, Hikanes LeMikdash, going into the Mikdash, or Lehorot B'davar Midinei HaTorah, or to render halach decision, Rambam just in one breath, he says, you know, you can't go into the Beit Mikdash, or to decide halach decision, Biyotenu Shikorim, if we are intoxicated. Again, today when you say Shikah, you think the guy's, you know, on the street, you know. But that's not the definition of Shikah. It means intoxication. This is what it says in Parashat Shmini. Yain v'shechar al teisht b'vo'achem alo amu'ed ulo'orot b'nei Yisrael. Brings the pasuk. And then he says, Lashon HaTalmud, the Gemara says, shatar revi'it al yore. If you drank just the revi'it yayin, which I already said is 86. 86, by the way, is the gematria of kaf vav samach, kos, a cup. So that's how it's easy to remember, the 86. And the Chazanish, who says 150, it's kos hagun, a real good cup. Kos hagun, that's 150. So, you know, for Leila Seder, so there are machmirim and mechilim. And all you have to do is drink rov kos. Leila Seder, you're supposed to drink the whole cup each time, four times. But if you drank the majority of the cup, that you're yaitu, you're fulfilled. So it's not like Kiddush. Kiddush Friday night is just a sip. It's a, what's called malol lugmav. You just take a shluk, and that's it. You don't have to finish the cup. You don't have to drink half the cup. But Leila Seder, men and women have to drink arba kosot yayin. But if you can't drink the whole cup, at least half the cup, more, little more than half the cup. That's and if you can't drink wine, use a grape juice or dilute it or something like that. Right. Famous shaylet the Rav's great grandfather got: can you be yaitzer arba kosot Leila Seder with milk? So what he did was he took out from the pushka, from the stalker box, it was a woman who asked the shayla, and he gave her money to buy chicken. I mean, who in the world would ask such a shayla about arba kosot with milk? Only somebody who couldn't afford meat for Yom Tov. And he realized implicitly in the shayla what was going on. That's a paisik. Read between the lines. Do you remember the Ben and Jerry's Charoises flavored ice cream?
Last year.
Yeah, I have a picture of it. I got it.
Was it good?
Delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course it was kosher Pesach.
It was badass.
Yeah. No, bells. I think they have bells. Okay. Okay. V'yesh kiluk ba'onish lav zeh. He says, the Rambam says, there's a difference in the penalty. Zeh ki shtuye yayin I efshar lahem likanez b'bein ha'ulam l'mizbeach in kol ha'echal. So there's all kinds of boundaries in the Beit HaMikdash and so on. And if a person is just paskening, rendering a lachic decision, fine. And now we're just going to jump to source number three. Even though we did source number three once already in the context of our learning with regard to tefillah, but I want to look at the last two lines. The last two lines where he quotes a medrash, underlined in source number three, Avdehu b'torato, avdehu b'mikdasho. Here the Rambam in source number three is talking about the mitzvah of davening. And the mitzvah of davening, where does it say in the Torah, you have to daven? Doesn't. It says, le'avdo b'chol levavchem, you have to serve God with all your heart. So Chazal understand that avodah shebelev is tefillah. So that's a derivation, that we know that you have to daven at least once a day from a biblical point of view. And he marshals all kinds of sources to show that that avodat Hashem has to do with tefillah. So where does he bring it from? He says, he brings a medrash that says, Avdehu b'torato, serve him in your with your Torah, and serve him with your Migdash. We bait the Migdash. Klomar, that is to say, Lalechet sham litpalel bo vinegdo kemosha bi'er shlomo alav shalom. What does it mean, Lalechet sham litpalel bo vinegdo? The Rambam has the ideal place of tefillah and the secondary place of tefillah. The ideal place of tefillah is in the Beit HaMikdash area. That's the ideal place. If you can't be there, second best is face the Mikdash. No matter where you are, face the Mikdash. And that's why in Hilchot Tefillah, the Rambam calls it Nochach HaMikdash, facing the Mikdash. You could be miles and miles away, or a kilometer away, but you're facing the Mikdash. Second best. And this, of course, is relevant for those who go up to Har HaBayit. So we're putting all the politics aside, just to go on Har HaBayit because you want to, you know, do a selfie opposite the Dome and Rock. That's unacceptable. You're only allowed to walk up to Har HaBayit if there's a purpose of Avodat Hashem. Well, Korbanot we don't have. Hishtachaviyah, bowing, they're not going to let you do it. And davening, they're not let you do that either. So what's left? The answer is that you can be meharher belev. Meharher belev means if you think tefillah, it's also tefillah, believe it or not. What does a person do if Rachmana Litzlan, a person was struck with a stroke and left them speechless, we know people like that, and want to daven? So what do? They think the tefillah. There's a Mishnah in the third parak of Masechet Brachot with regard to a suggestion in the days of Ezra, a suggestion that, by the way, was dropped, that men should be going to the mikveh every single day because of tumah. And so, and if a person didn't go, what's with Kriya Shema, what's with Brachot? So it says, Maharher Bilibo, you think it. So you see there's a precedent in the Mishnah of thinking tefillah. So a person who does go up to Har HaBayit should be thinking tefillah as he or she makes the round for the hour and a half tour of the Old City, of the Har HaBayit. Because that's called Avodat Hashem. So that's Migdash. And what is Avodah B'Torah? Avodah B'Torah is also, learning Torah is also Avodat Hashem. No doubt. Because, and this, who knows if the Rambam didn't flush this out from source number one, that going into the Mikdash and rendering halachic decisions are all what we call in the Gemara language, Haba Hatalia, linked one to the other. Linked one to the other. That person is connected to Mikdash, a person is connected to Torah also, because the Beit Din HaGadol, the Sanhedrin, sat in the Mikdash area, and they were the authorities of Torah. So both the location of Mikdash functions also for tefillah and other expressions of Avodat Hashem, as well as for Torah. Now this is important. Now take a look what the Sefer HaChinuch has to say. Sefer HaChinuch, I didn't bring the whole introduction because it's almost a carbon copy of what the Rambam says in the Sefer HaMitzvot. But what does he say in the Shorash? Shorash HaMitzvah means the Mishnah Mitzvah rationale. Shorash HaMitzvah Yadua. Well, it's pretty obvious why you can't render a halachic decision intoxicated or serve a Beit HaMikdash intoxicated. She'ein ra'ui litasek b'dvarim ha'yikarim b'tachlit ha'yoker. We should not be involved in those most precious things. Kigon, kemo, inyanei HaMikdash v'divrei Torah. matters of Mikdash and matters of Torah. Rak be'et she'yeh adam miyushav bedato. He's got to be settled in his mind. U'mechuvan b'chol masav. And all his actions have to be correct, focused. That's the good word, focused. I'm going to go spend extra sentences on this. You don't understand this yourself, he's saying. It's so pashut, it's so simple. You know why? But then he goes on to the next line. V'noheg isur bi'at mikdash b'shikrut b'zman habayit. The prohibition of entering into the mikdash area intoxicated is a isur b'zman habayit, when Beit HaMikdash is up and running, b'zcharim b'nekevot, for men and women. Uminiyat ha'hora'a b'chol makom u'b'chol hazman b'zcharim. And the prohibition of rendering halachic decisions it has nothing to do with Beit HaMikdash. It's relevant in all time and all places for men. And here's the underline. V'chein be'isha chachama haru'uya lehorot. So a woman who enjoys the privilege of smicha is not allowed to paskin a shayla intoxicated.
Less likely.
Okay. No, but what am I bringing out here? That it exists in the world of halakha. So look at source number five. Source number five is lifted out of context from the Rav Shurim on Masechet Baba Kama. I tip my hat to Rav Heshi Reichman, one of the fine Ramim of the yeshiva in YU, who took upon himself many years ago to start publishing the Rav Shurim according to the order of the Gemara. So I think I have five or six volumes that have come out already. First one was Masechet Sukkah, but one of the last ones was a Baba Kama. Came out in two volumes. He used notes, his own notes. He used notes from other people. He used tapes. The Rav used to record Shurim. So they're really good, because I remember at least Masechet Sukkah, I myself was at the Shurim and I review it. I used the Sefer. He's got it right. Really, the recall is very, very, very good. My brother's notes is one of the sources. By the way, my brother was one of the great stenographers for the Rav. Because there are some, let's say, Rav Hershey Shecht himself has a lot of notes. But Rav Hershey Shecht was such a brilliant man, he used to throw in his own stuff as he was taking notes. It refers to this, refers to that we know the Rav never mentioned. So you don't know what's Rav and what's Rav Shecht. My brother was a stenographer. He pashut wrote the Rav Shurim to the extent that when the Rav had to put together a bechina at the end of the semester, he took my brother's notes to know what he said. So that's pretty good. So I have copies. I have thousands of pages on my brother's notes. So here in Baba Kama it reads as follows: Dome shelekachit kavnu hatosfot beomram shedvora lo haita dana. In Shirat Dvorah, it says he shofetet. We just read it. Shafta. Now shafta means she judged. So she was a woman, right? So how does that work? So the Rav develops a whole idea that in the process of the judiciary of Beitin, there were really two stages. Stage one was a theoretical discussion. Right? Reuven and Shimon, as they say in a Beis Medrash. Reuven, is demanding from Shimon something. Reuven did this to Shimon. There's always a Reuven, a Shimon, and a Rachel, and a Leah, and that's it. Theoretical P personalities. And you have a theoretical discussion. And of course, when there's a case before the Dayanim, the first thing that's going to happen is carry out a theoretical discussion of the halacha. Stage two is the application. Then they come to some conclusion and say, and now this conclusion is on the two of you standing here. So the Rav said that stage one, there's no limitation at all for a woman to be involved in that process. It was stage two of the application of the Psak Halacha on the relevant litigants that the Halacha said that it should be Gvarim, it should be men and not women. Why? That's another issue. But this distinction, the Rav proves categorically, exists. And therefore he says that when Tosfot said that Dvorah lo haita dana, it meant that she was involved in the first stages,
but not involved in the last stage of the practical application. She would then teach the other dayanim what to say. She would tell them what to say. I'll give you a good, great example. So my daughter Hannah gets a case in Be'er Sheva. It was a very complex question of a woman who my daughter felt both medically, without a question. She said this woman needed an abortion. She was pregnant. There were complications, and there were all kinds of, you know, shelot u'tshuvot at what stage and so on. So she called me up. I said, "What are you calling me up?" I said, "You know this better than I do." I mean, she said that she spoke to the family about it, and the family said, it was a Haredi family, and they were willing to go along with it, provided that a Rav said that it's okay. So my daughter said, "Hey, there's an Adi Behuda, there's a Rav Moshe Feinstein, you know, my daughter can spit it out, you know." No, she, but they don't care which Rav, whatever. They told my daughter, whatever Rav, if you tell me you heard it from a Rav, we'll go along with it. They were okay with that. So I said, I asked my daughter, I said, "Hannah, what do you think? Let's discuss it." So we discuss it. So I said, "Okay, so tell them." No. They have to hear it from a Rav. So what do you want me to do? Abba, repeat after me. And she dictates to me. I'm telling you, this is what happened. She says, "Abba, repeat after me." And she dictates to me exactly what she's then going to tell the family. He said, "Okay, I just heard it from a Rav." You know, once a Galiciana, always a Galiciana. That's pretty sharp. But this is exactly what the Rav's saying here, is what Tosfot said, that melamedet lahem hadinim. So Dvorah was teaching the Dayanim then what to say in the stage of the application. Ritzono lomar, Shaita mora dinei Torah kishofetet, aval lo gamra et adin al hanidonim. She didn't complete the procedure with the application on the litigants. Isha kshira l'shem hora'at hilchot haTorah hamehave chalut shel mishpat. A woman is kosher to render a halachic decision, and it has the substance of mishpat. Meidach, on the other side, isha psula ligmor et adin al hanidonim. She's not going to be able to deliver the practical application, but that is only in dinei mamonot, in monetary cases. When it comes to yoredeya, on the kitchen, on issues of nida, for sure the woman has what to say, and it's applicable. Notice, you don't have to have, if you ask a woman a shayla in kashrus, so she says, "You know, I think it's kosher." All right, let's go to a rabbi who's going to tell you it's kosher. This was my gripe against what the yoed said. First of all, some of the rabbanim are not comfortable with the yoed said either. But they said it's not a psak for her, and she has to give the psak over to the rabbi. Why? She's allowed to. This is not din, this is not mishpat. This is hora'ah. And in terms of hora'ah, she's allowed to do it. Absolutely allowed to do it. And okay, you know, slippery slope. So we were in the States in the summer. So my older daughter, also no slouch in learning. My older daughter's a big minyan goer in the weekday. Vakasha, I don't know where she got that from. So she's with me at the 6:30 minyan in Holliswood in Queens. So I kibitzed. I said, "Over, forgot your tefillin?" So she said, "I'm only halfway down the slope." Way down the slope. You know, see, we're poking fun out of all this, and you know, they're making a big thing that it's very, very serious. Take a look, just the last source, number 6. We have a minute. The Rambam. The Rambam says, it's the end of the fourth chapter of Hilchot Yisadei Torah, which is the first unit in the Mishnah Torah. And he's talking about metaphysics. The Rambam believes that there's cosmology, proving God exists through cosmology and other things. And then he talks about the pardes. Pardes is an orchard, the Gemara Masechet Chagiga, different explanations. The Rambam says the pardes was metaphysics. And he says there's davar gadol and davar katan. There's the big things and the small things. You know what the small things are? Havayot da abaya varava, the chit-chat of the Amoroyim, what we call Gemara learning. Davarim gadolim, oh, that's the heavy stuff. But look what he says about the easy stuff.
four lines from the end. Afapi shedvarim, the Rambam says Vani Omer. You see what says Vani Omer underlined? Third line in source number six. She'ein ra'uy l'tayel b'pardes. We shouldn't be walking in this orchard. Elamishim nitmalei kreso lecha b'basara. Until you fill up your stomach with bread and meat. Of course, it's all allegorical. Allegorical. Lechem u'basar, what is lechem and basar? Leidah ha'asur v'amutar, to know what's forbidden, what's permissible. U'kiyotze behem yishar mitzvot. You know the halachot. That's called the bread and butter of Torah, right? Here he says bread and milk, bread and meat. V'afa pichein, shadvarim elu divrei katan karu otam chachamim. Even though this is just small matter, this is small potatoes. Shari amu chachamim, ha'chachamim said, davar gadol, maseh merkava. Oh, that's metaphysics, that's big time. Davar katan, havayot abaya v'rava, the chit-chat of abaya and rava in the Gemara. Afa pichein, ru'u yin hein lagdiman. You get the small things in first. Don't start with maseh merkava. Shehein miyashvin dato shel adam t'chila, it settles your mind. ועוד שהם הטובה הגדולה שהשפיע הקדוש ברוך הוא ליישוב העולם הזה כדי לנחול חיי העולם הבא. This is the program that הקדוש ברוך הוא wanted we should be involved in this world to prepare us properly for העולם הבא. ואפשר שידעם הכל. Everybody is capable on some level of הוויות דאבאיה אין רובה. קטן וגדול, the young and the old, איש ואישה, the man, the woman, Balev Rachav, Balev Katzar, person who has wider understanding, more limited capability, it's not closed. It's not closed. The Rambam here is saying, hello, women, you're invited to take part in Havayot D'Abaya V'Rova. You're invited to take part in knowing what is Asur and Mutar. And a lot of people don't know this Rambam, but it's Rambam, same Rambam, you know, that we know. And therefore, I say that in kol hakavod, you know, we should all be well. In 50 years, we'll see what's going on in society. It's going to be very different. It's going to be very, very different. And we should, you know, be psychologically prepared, you know, for all these changes. I once told that some of you know Dr. Brian Alevi, acquaintance of ours, a very fine teacher of Tanakh. So she believed wholeheartedly that we are all conditioned of studying Torah through male eyes. All the parshanim are men. And now we have women writing perushim. So we're getting a female take on the Torah. You're getting a different angle. So I told her, the Gemara says, the Masechet Kiddushin, on the word derech, it says, Isha niknet b'shalosh derachim. The Gemara all of a sudden goes on a tangent and says, is the word derech, lashon zachar or lashon nekeva, and proves from Tanakh that it can go either way. There are, in modern Hebrew, it's nekeva. We say derech achat, derechim shonot. That's how it's worked. So we use it as nekeva. But in the Torah, b'shiv'a derechim yanusu lefanecha, so you have different expressions where it's lashon zachar. So I told Brian Levy, I said, you see, there's a lashon zachar derech and a lashon nekeva derech. They're two different drachim and how to understand the Torah. And that is the Tovatenu, that we're getting a different exposure to what Torah is all about, and that only can be a bracha. Okay. So.